an intro about who you are and what you do.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Ryan. My name is Brian Nguyen. I'm a certified public accountant here in California. My past life, I spent a lot of time in the corporate world helping other businesses with tax planning, tax resolution, tax services, pretty much anything with the word taxes in it. Then I decided to become a solo practitioner and help digital marketing agencies with all things tax, accounting, and finance. So I've been doing that on my own for about the past year, year and a half now, working remotely out of my home office. It's a complete remote practice.
So a lot of us rule. So So you decided to specialize in agencies, which I think is incredibly smart. I think that there's an abundance of agencies, and when it comes to taxes and stuff like that, not a lot of us really know what we're doing. So, I mean, what would you think? What do you think the main difference is between agency taxes and, you know, normal small business taxes?
A lot of it has to do with the way that I think our economy in general has transformed from being a more in a brick and mortar space to perhaps more of like a remote online business world. And digital marketing agencies are no exception to that. Just in general, for most of the agencies and owners that I've worked with over the past year or so, most of them tend to be remote from home office using software and platforms and technology in order to bridge the gap with client service that might not have been possible in the past. And because of the way that we do work now, especially with agency owners, that creates a shift in what types of operations you have, what kinds of expenses you incur. And what I've noticed is that a lot of older practitioners in the accounting space are just not up to date with that type of practice and what's commonplace in our world in this day and age. And so, you know, with agencies in particular, like just having an understanding of what type of services you offer, what types of expenses you're going to incur, who you're working with, where your labor force comes from, how to measure profitability, and all the fun tax stuff that comes around that is really the big difference in agencies versus other types of small businesses.
And you do full service, so you do accounting and tax, correct?
That's correct. We do accounting and tax services all together. Yep. Usually one kind of leads after the other. Just in general, it's kind of hard to help with tax planning and identifying tax savings opportunities without having the meat and potatoes of your accounting and finance in place. In other words, you need to have some visibility into how your business is doing before you can ever really draft up a tax plan.
And you recommend that agencies work with an accountant firm to handle all their day-to-day books and then just use the same one for tax planning as well?
Yeah, it can be one and the same person. Like what we do is we do a combination of accounting, finance, and tax strategy. Some people prefer to have a separate bookkeeper, someone who's more familiar with the day in, day out operations of their business, and then hire out a CPA or an enrolled agent to do their taxes. So either case is acceptable in my mind, and probably for a lot of people, it's probably easier to have everything done by one shop, someone who's competent, not just in the industry, but also in the different areas of accounting, tax, and finance. Just makes it a little more streamlined and easier to coordinate the different things that you need to do on an annual basis.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, I've been working with an accountant now. It's just one of those things where, like, once you get stuck working with a firm, it can be tough to transition because they have all your information. They've been through it with you. But, you know, I told myself this year, I'm for sure, I mean, we'll talk offline, but I'm for sure going to work with someone who only works with agencies because there are a lot of nuances in regards to just how things work, in regards to how we incur expenses. We use a lot of 1099s. I mean, especially for smaller agencies, most of our workforce is 1099s. And I know there's a difference when you're, so I had a 45 person agency, all W-2. There's a difference when you go to W-2, right? At what point do you think an agency should hire a full-time accounting? And then, I mean, you gotta hire a tax firm either way, but accounting, like the day-to-day, like how much revenue should they be doing? Percentage of revenue, how do you charge? How does that fit in? What do you recommend for agencies?
Yeah, it's a good question. And it's really going to depend on the agency and how quickly you want to grow and how stable you are. But what we've noticed is that a lot of agencies, even going up to the 2 million mark, don't have a full-time accounting resource on their staff. Usually they prefer to focus their investment and priority on the service delivery aspect of their business, which means, as you said, hiring employees, PMs, SEO specialists, consultants, contractors of all kinds in order to staff their agency from top to bottom. And they actually kind of leave the administrative aspect, the administrative function off to the side, even up to the $10 million mark, where they're willing to go without a full-time accounting professional. And in this day and age, it's actually easier to do that. And the main reason why is because for a lot of companies, it doesn't make sense to hire a full staff accountant, paying them like $60,000, $70,000 a year just to do their books, accounts receivable, accounts payable, all that fun stuff. At the 2 million mark, Mo, that's where things get a little bit interesting, because you start to get really stretched thin with what you are capable of doing as a CEO and owner of your company. And the processes and operations become a little more sophisticated at that level. And that's when I'd say it probably makes sense to either hire someone internally who's going to be able to manage a significant portion of the accounting function, or you work with, say, an outsourced CFO service, like something that we do, where you get what I call accounting professional by resource at every single level, at the level that you need it.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, you might not need a CFO for 40 hours a week, but it would be nice to have one for 1, 2, 3 hours a week. And an outsourced CFO firm, is able to offer that level of service while also having all the other resources needed to do the day-to-day practice in the business. So they'll be able to staff out a bookkeeper who's going to help you manage your books on a weekly basis. They'll be able to staff out a higher level accountant who can help reconcile things and make sure that everything's kosher, while also offering you that strategy piece that you might be missing with a full-time resource. So up until 2 million, that's probably the recommended. And then after that, that's when I start to see people making decisions where they want to hire at least an accounting manager internally, mostly to manage project economics, but also all the back end stuff in the accounting world too.
Sure. So a lot of people, a lot of agencies especially, got into this game because of something that they saw online. They didn't necessarily go to school for marketing, so they don't have the accounting background. I was super fortunate. I ended up getting my MBA, so I know accounting, and I understand the importance of understanding the numbers. But a lot of people get into this because they're like, oh shit, I'm good at Facebook ads, I'm good at SEO, people want to pay me for it, so let me start a business. And before you know it, they're not in control of their books. And I've seen this happen growing agencies up to $5 million. They just don't have a handle on their numbers. But, and I think that goes all the way back to the beginning. So let's start from like the very beginning. If you're going to set up an agency or work with someone setting up an agency today, like what would you recommend in regards to like an LLC, S Corp, and like how should somebody structure their agency?
So starting from the very, very beginning, I usually recommend that someone start with just having a simple sole proprietorship or DBA, like a trade name that you can register with your county. And the reason why is when you're starting out, a lot of times your focus and emphasis is on client acquisition. How do you get a client? How do you get revenue in the door? Yeah. So even starting out, I don't even recommend they apply for a separate legal entity or try and acquire one, because their focus is on one thing and one thing only. It's client acquisition. Once someone has a couple of recurring clients in the door, actually helping to keep the lights on, pay the bills, that's when I say you probably have some kind of legal protection need. And then I would tell them, all right, you're at the level now where people won't take you seriously unless you actually have a separate legal company. Why don't you set up a limited liability company, or an LLC for short? That's probably the most common structure. It's the most flexible structure. It grants pretty much limited protection to anyone who owns it up to a certain point. It's really the default and go-to de facto standard in the agency world and for most small businesses. And the reason why is because they're simple, they're flexible, they're cheap, and very easy to do. And that's just from a legal perspective, right? You get an LLC, you start doing all your business operations through your LLC, and you and your LLC are separate and distinct. Like, your company is the one that's doing business, not you. And that's something that I really like to harp on and educate with people that I'm working with. From there, you can elect to do a different tax classification, which is a separate concept from whatever legal company that you actually decide to set up. What we see most commonly is at the earlier stages, if someone's doing less than about $100,000 a year in profit, I would recommend that they just leave their classification as the default. And the default classification for anyone who has got an LLC that they own 100% is a sole proprietorship. Okay. At above $100,000, that's when I start taking a look at some more numbers and identifying that there's probably going to be some tax savings opportunities if they elect S corporation status with their business. And an S corporation, for those of you who don't know, is really just a tax classification for your company that says that you are a pass-through entity, so separate and distinct from you, that reports all the income and then passes it on to you as the shareholder. And the key difference and distinction between an S corporation and a disregarded entity is that with an S corporation, they're not subject to self-employment tax on their shareholder income. Yeah. So super high level example. You make $100,000 a year from your agency. Okay. And if you are a sole proprietorship, you're going to have to pay self-employment tax on that amount. Self-employment taxes can be up to 15.3%. So a lot of money on $100K, right? $15,300. But if you're an S corporation, you would pay pretty much zero on that. No self-employment tax. There's some caveats, of course, but you know, that's one of the key things that I would recommend is, like, under a certain level, keep it simple. You can do an LLC, leave your classification the same. Over 100,000, it's probably worth the cost to have your accounting and taxes done with an S corp.
I'm set up as an S corp. I have an LLC that's an S corp because I have four revenue streams right now. And the way that my accountant explained it to me was that, first of all, it's easier to account for when you have all these revenue streams. One of my companies lost a shitload of money. So it was actually good because that passed through, I had a ton of profit from three companies, but huge losses from another company that effectively wiped out my owed taxes for last year, which was great. If I wasn't set up that way, then that would have just, it wouldn't have passed through to me because I didn't actually draw any income from that company. So, I mean, these things are really, and these are the things, man, like when you're younger and you're just thinking about it, like you said, client acquisition, these are the things that you don't think about. And then, I think every entrepreneur goes through that kind of like slap in the face where Uncle Sam comes around and they're like, yeah, great. Your company made 500 grand. You took home 200K in profit, but like, you took a salary from the company, you owe us tax on that. And that profit, by the way, you owe us taxes on that too. And the bigger that profit is, the higher your tax range is going to be. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, in regards to that, people go through that, they got to figure that out the hard way, right? You're going to get a tax bill. But after that, I mean, how can entrepreneurs and agency owners, how can they better plan for taxes and reducing that taxable income at the end of the year? Are there any, because, and also too, I think just at the very high level, explain to people what tax deductions are, because a lot of people, like my girlfriend doesn't quite grasp the fact that while something might be tax deductible, I still have to pay for that. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, people are like, that's a write-off. It's a write-off. You know? Like, that's a write-off coming out of my damn pocket. You know what I mean?
Dude, you are totally, you hit the nail on the head, because the funniest thing is what I had to explain to you entrepreneurs, that yes, although you get a deduction, it doesn't mean that you're actually netting any money. You're still losing money. It's just a little bit less than you would be. But yeah, let's keep it simple. Let's start with tax deductions and what a tax deduction is, right? And a deduction reduces your reported income on your tax return because you had some kind of associated expense with your business. And a reduction in your overall taxable income means that you're going to be paying less taxes. Now, key here is that if you spend a dollar, you're not getting a dollar back from the government. If you spend a dollar, you're just reducing your taxable income, which means you might be getting 20 cents back. Or 30 cents back, or 40 cents back, depending on what your tax rate is. So the goal is to make sure that, to the extent possible, if you're running a business, you're going to maximize as much deduction as possible, which means lowering your taxable income and reducing your tax liability, for those of you guys who are listening. But generally, what I notice is that if you're running a business, your expenses kind of run in parallel to what you can claim as a deduction. One example is, let's say you hire a contractor. You pay them $1,000 a month to do some contract work for you. Okay? Well, your business is losing $1,000 a month, right? But you are going to get a deduction for $1,000 per month at the end of the year when you actually file your tax return. So really, the way taxes should be viewed is that you're paying taxes on your business profits. So yes, you do claim as much as possible in deductions, but that's really going to translate over from the business expenses that you're incurring, that you're paying out of pocket to grow your business or make money from. So simple example, you make $150,000 in revenue from clients. You spend $50,000 in order to support that revenue. And now your profit is $100,000. Likelihood is that's probably what's going to carry over to your tax return when you file, whether you have an S corporation or a sole proprietorship. So that's a deduction in a nutshell. And my job as a CPA and accountant is to make sure that, one, you're recording everything on your books to make sure that we've captured all your expenses, because you need that visibility as a business owner to make sure money's coming in. And then, two, to make sure that we're deducting everything that is allowable under the tax law. So most of the time it's coming from your books, but sometimes there's hidden things that you don't know that you can deduct that we want to make sure that you're claiming. Okay. So one really good tax strategy that I like to recommend to anyone, even if you're coming up on the end of the year or the new year now, that you can still evaluate for 2019. If you're a sole proprietor and you work from your home office to do your business, in the eyes of the tax law, you can actually claim a tax benefit for a part of your home that you're spending for your business. Okay. Really simple example. Let's say you rent out a 2-bedroom place and you use one of the rooms exclusively and solely for your home office, kind of like what I have right here. You can deduct a portion of your rent, utilities, like you name it. You know, you can claim a portion of that and reduce your tax bill. The reason why it's most commonly missed is because it's an expense that you're paying out of your personal accounts that you don't necessarily see in your business. Okay. So when I said earlier, yeah.
Well, just a quick question off that, because this is hyper relevant for me, because I have an office, just second office of the year, but I work from home probably 100% of the time. But so the way I do my own, I started to treat my personal expenses, like my own personal credit card, as I would with a P&L, you know, balance sheet, all that stuff, like classifying each expense because of stuff like this, because there's a lot of things that I end up paying for on a personal level, my rent. So like, how should I classify that? Because this is something that my accountant in the past has struggled with. She doesn't get the multiple companies. She's a little bit more old school, right? She's not like, kind of like what you alluded to, is a lot of tax companies aren't necessarily in tune with how the younger generation is working right now, you know, and how really my business is my life and my life and my business, they blend together. Right. So like, how can I understand, you know, I do my best. Obviously, we have 4 separate bank accounts for each one of our businesses, their own cards, their own line of credit, all that stuff. But inevitably, stuff still I'll put on my card. Like, how do I go about applying that, my personal expenses, to my business, if applicable, I guess?
Yeah, really one of two ways. I think you have two approaches to it. And the approach probably depends on how sophisticated your business is. Now, Ryan, I know you got a pretty big agency. So at that level, usually what I recommend is that there has to be some kind of internal accounting process. And I say accounting process, no different than if you're just an employee of another organization, that allows you to submit receipts for expense reimbursement. Okay. Really, really high level example that's kind of widely applicable to anyone, even if you're just an employee at a W-2. But let's say you take a client out to lunch, okay, and you spend, $80 on a meal with your client, right? And you put it on your personal card, but you know you need to get reimbursed by your business. Okay? So you'll put it on your Chase Sapphire Reserve or Amex, whatever. And but you got to get that money back into your personal account because you paid for a business meal. So generally speaking, any organization at that large size should have some kind of ability that allows you to apply for an expense reimbursement, say $80 worth, right? And the business should pay you for it, either through their payroll system or either through a bank transfer of some kind. But really simply, there are accounting softwares and platforms that allow you to do that. One example is Expensify, which allows you to apply for reimbursement from the business. And all of a sudden, the business is actually paying money out of its bank account to reimburse you for it, right? It's getting mapped to meals and entertainment. And then when it comes to tax time, it's now a deduction at up to 50% off, because you can only claim the 50% deduction for meals. So that's one example. But let's say you're working out of your home office, for example, right? And just like I have for my business reimbursed me for a portion of my own office. So I actually apply for a reimbursement. It sounds silly because, you know, it's just me, but I actually apply for a reimbursement. I say, hey, I paid this much in rent, I paid this much in utilities, right? For a portion of this place that I'm renting, I'm really using it for the business. So business, please reimburse me for that amount. Okay. And it can be, you know, $500, $1,000, $1,500, depending on what I'm actually incurring. But it makes a really big difference, because now you're getting money back in your personal account to cover that cost, and the business is getting a deduction. And it's a legitimate deduction because it's for the business, right? Yeah. The business doesn't have a physical place in order for you to conduct your work, so we're going to pay you for it instead, right? So conceptually, it makes sense. You know, the IRS is going to give you some legislative grace to take that deduction. And then on top of that, you're getting your money back in your personal account, tax-free.
So I was going to ask, are we liable to be taxed on that money?
Tax-free, yeah. Some stuff is taxable, though. Not everything is, like, you know, tax-free. Some stuff is taxable. Some, like, for example, there's an entire category called fringe benefits. So if you're paying for, like, gym memberships, or if you're paying for, like, a car for an officer, those types of things, they're not going to fly. They're going to have to be taxable if you're W-2. But, you know, home office deduction, that's tax-free.
So, about the car, somebody at Jonathan on Facebook asked, my cars are on the company name, but paid for my personal account. Are those tax write-offs?
They're under the company name, paid for on the personal account. That's a little tricky situation, because the car is under the company name. So in theory, the company should be the one paying for it. And if the company is not paying for it because you are, then the company has to reimburse you for it. Okay. Now, you know, whether or not it's deductible is entirely based on how much you're using your vehicle for business versus how much you're using it for personal. So in general, if the company's paying for your lease, the company will claim a deduction, but you as an employee of your business might have to recognize income for that, for the personal use. You can think of it as being akin to like an officer perk, you know, like, hey, you're getting these cool, you know, perks, but you get to include it on your W-2 income. That's a good question.
There's actually, now that we're on that too, because there's, you mentioned meals, right? Only 15% of that is deductible, right? Then you also touched on cars, about how it depends on how much you're using that for the business. There's a lot of, I think, myths in taxes that, like, I know they changed the, on M&E, they changed a couple years ago, right? They changed that they're not fully deductible anymore, right?
Yeah, like, entertainment expenses are no longer deductible.
What are some other common myths? Like, because I, again, the concept of, people might get deductions and write-offs, but I think that they often overestimate how much they can deduct or write off, right?
Yeah.
Cars being one of them. I think meals is a huge one, right? People are like, ah, fuck it, it's on the business. And they just swipe the MX for a $2,000 bill, but it's like, oh no, wait, that's going to come out of your pocket now. Yeah. Like, also with the car thing too, I used to work with somebody who was adamant about putting officer cars on the company. Is that 100% deductible no matter what? I mean, how do they know? Like, is it depending on how much you drive? Does it have to be recorded each time you drive it?
Yeah. So with a vehicle lease, for example, because we have a lot of business owners who lease their car through the company. First off, if you're leasing a vehicle, there is a concept in the tax world called an auto lease inclusion. It intentionally haircuts the amount of deduction that a company is entitled to take on a lease expense. So say you're paying $500 a month for a lease car, whatever it may be, depending on the fair value of that car, and this changes year over year, you might have to haircut the deduction. So that's just off the bat. And that could be like 20% off the deduction, right? So you're not getting the full benefit on your tax return. That's the first side of the equation. So how much can your business actually deduct? And that'll eventually translate over to your tax return, right? The other side of the equation is, how much do you have to include in income if you're getting a company car benefit, right? And this is the most commonly missed part, and it's something that we usually review as part of the payroll process if we're doing accounting, is if you're getting a company car benefit, that's no different than getting, in the eyes of the tax law, that's actually no different than getting paid by the company. It's almost as if the company is giving you this benefit, and so you're getting some kind of compensation for it, like a company perk or a bonus. So that is driven by the percentage use of the vehicle. Percentage use is determined by mileage, and only mileage. So if you drive your car for business like 50% of the time, then the other half is personal. And in theory, you actually have to include half of the lease in your W-2. Compensation, assuming you're an S corporation.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, I think a lot of people skirt around that.
Oh yeah, it's pretty commonly missed, but it's also commonly audited too, because the easiest thing for the IRS to see is lease vehicle expense.
Yeah.
Okay, and so they look at the lease vehicle expense. Okay, where's the income inclusion? where on both sides, right? Because you have the auto lease inclusion and you also have the income inclusion on your W-2, which, you know, if you're an S corporation, you should be issued a W-2 by the company. So basically, I'd say go to an accountant who can identify these things in advance. But a lot of it's like a communication issue too. Like, you know, if you don't have someone that you can rely on regularly that you can talk to about these things, who can see them at a high level and advise you what to do and what not to do, then, you know, it's going to translate to misreporting or missed opportunities one way or another.
Yeah, I liken your industry so much to attorneys. It's like you don't know how badly you need one until you like royally get boned, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Get boned,
and then you have to pay $100,000 back taxes. That's like you would have paid for an accountant up front. Seems, you know,
yeah,
nothing, you know. But I think a lot of people are hesitant to invest because they're too green. They don't fully understand how it starts with accounting, like just basic accounting principles. You know, mm-hmm. revenue. What's an operating cost? What's, you know, so what's an expense? What can be classified as a deductible expense? All these things, you know, I think out the last 10 years, we've kind of hyper sped past that because, you know, school's kind of going out of the way because you can make money from home now. So who gives a shit? Mm-hmm. You know? But I'll be honest that the MBA wasn't really worth my time or money, but the accounting, mm-hmm. the accounting was worth its weight in everything. I had to take 2 accounting classes and just my learnings from that, you know, it didn't help me out getting started. But once I hit that, you know, million a year in revenue, then it was like, okay, this is less about acquisition, right? Like we've got a good pipeline of leads. This is more about management, right? This is understanding how to manage capital. This is understanding how to deploy it, make the right decisions, and ultimately get some other people in there who know what they're doing to take this shit off my hands, because it's not a good idea in my, like anyone watching this, like outsource, get somebody to do your accounting. Just do it. You know, it's like not worth your time and energy to do it because you're probably going to mess it up. And if you do, and you watch your taxes, because that's the thing too, is that if you go to an accountant, a tax accountant with books already done, they're not going to redo them. They're going to take it at face value because you're just paying them to do your taxes, right? So they're just going to kind of just put a Band-Aid on top of your errors. And then it's not their fault if you get audited. And then audited, it's going to be painful, man. Like very, very painful.
I think one of the most challenging aspects of it is people know that they need to seek help, but they don't necessarily know who's good enough in order to help them with the problems that they have. Right, it's hard to shop around for accountants. Like you get referrals from people, and they may or may not be good. But the problem is that if you don't know as much in the accounting or tax world, like you have expertise because you got your MBA and you've had a few years of experience in your belt doing SEO and running an agency, right? But let's say you're green and you're new and you're like 1 or 2 years into your agency, like how do you know who a good accountant is? How do you know a good tax practitioner is? Like you just won't know, and even if they're doing your work, you won't know if they're doing it right because you have no way to check against that. So one of my recommendations, like to anyone who's starting a business, especially agency owners, is actually like doing your own accounting when you first start out. And as you said, like one of the most valuable things to be able to learn is how to understand numbers and even simple bookkeeping, like really, really simple bookkeeping, doing your own books and QuickBooks or whatever, you know, preferred software you have. The basic stuff is pretty easy to learn and pick up. Like you might not want to do it because like you're resistant and you're scared of it, but I guarantee you it's going to make you so much better of a business owner. And then when it's time to pass on the torch for someone to take over that responsibility from you, you at least have a fundamental understanding of how it works so you can properly manage them. And also like find the right provider who knows what they're doing, because some people are just not that good.
Yeah, absolutely. We got another question. It's from Matt Crane. He says, I know Clever Taxes can handle accounting and bookkeeping, but can they also get a setup with Gusto, even though they may provide a separate way to run payroll? Also, do they work with QuickBooks Online? So basically, I mean, what software do you guys use? What software do you recommend? We actually used, actually, it's funny, my girlfriend does enterprise sales for ADP. I was obviously trying to plug her, but our CFO ended up going with Gusto because it was cheaper and it was self-service.
Yeah. So my software stack for pretty much every one of my clients is QuickBooks Online, Gusto, and then for our tax software, we use ProConnect, but that's not really something our clients see. And the reason why is really because QuickBooks Online has the most integrations. It plugs and plays with almost everything. And Gusto, because it is the easiest payroll platform that we've ever used, like for anyone, and well worth the monthly fee. So that's what we use in our practice. You know, we do use QuickBooks Online for all of our clients. And then we plug that in with Gusto, which Gusto does the majority of the payroll process, and it's predominantly self-managed unless it's like a higher level client that has 10 or 20, or more resources that they're paying out on a regular basis.
Can't wait to show this recording to my girlfriend because she.
Sorry.
No, I mean, I get it, dude. I've used.
We have to go with, for us, like, especially as a business owner, right? You want to work, like, you want something that's going to be convenient for you, right? And Gusto, more than any other product, has been the most convenient, not just for me, but also for my clients, right? Like, it basically runs itself for them, and then they just have to review it every pay cycle, and they usually know who's getting paid what, and so it's really simple. And then they do everything for you at your end. Like right now, they're doing all the W-2s and 1099 reporting for us, and we just need to spot check it. So as an accountant, as a business owner, we want to find the things that are going to be easiest and automated, and Gusto has just been the provider for us there.
Yeah, and the cost is a lot more.
For ADP or for Gusto?
Well, for my understanding, look, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't really have anything to do with these decisions. I think marketing and sales is up my alley. Finance, I understand it, but I prefer to work with let one of my partners handle. Actually, I have another partner in my businesses now. I left that business, but I have another partner who handles all of our finances. He came from like BlackRock Capital, so he understands all that stuff and projections and all that stuff. So I just let him handle it, and I just stay out of it. But I have to do this stuff for myself because we all have to deal with taxes no matter what, you know.
Yeah.
And you know, the more that you make, the more important that this stuff becomes, man, because you work so hard. And they will take a massive chunk. So actually off the back of that, do you recommend, so I've worked with a lot of companies now and worked in a lot of companies. Do you recommend at the end of the year, if you have a high margin, high profit business, let's say you do a million at 50% net, you have 500 left in the bank at the end of the year. Do you recommend, like, are there any ways to clear that out to reduce taxable income? Like, do you recommend, if possible, right? Got ahead of myself. If you're on salary, right, which you should. Mm-hmm. If you're on salary, your income is set, you don't necessarily need to take another that much money. Do you recommend that the business just plow that into an investment, invest in something else, invest in advertisement, or just take the hit on taxes and keep the money, or just leave it in the account? You know, like, what is it that you recommend?
Yeah, it's a really good question, and one that we got a lot of feeding up into the new year. So my philosophy is, if you have an actual purpose to spend that money, like you had already earmarked that money for investment, whether it was on ad spend, hiring a new contractor, prepaying for certain expenses going into 2020, things of that nature that you're already planning on spending anyway, or like you wanted to make that investment without consideration for taxes. And I say, yes, do it. Go ahead and front that money today, prepay, get your discount, get your deduction, because you're going to do it anyway, right? Mm-hmm. But never spend money that you weren't planning on spending money just to lower your taxes for. Like, that goes against every fiber of my being as a business owner, as an advisor to business owners. It just doesn't make any sense, unless you were planning on spending that money anyway. Spending money just for the sake of getting a deduction is just throwing away money. But you know, who knows? Like, you might translate to an actual benefit down the road. I have some business owners that are very growth minded, and I have some that are more like profit and. I mean, everyone's profit focused, yes, but sometimes you have to sacrifice profit for growth. Growth usually comes from increased investment and spending and people and software and platforms and all these things. So the ones that are growth minded tend to make those larger investments closer to your end. It's not too late to do them now. You're just not going to get a deduction until next year. But they're always like thinking, you know, I want to maintain a certain level of profitability, but I also want to grow faster. So what do I need to do that? Where can I make those investments? And am I willing to operate on thinner margins in order to grow my top line and get to a higher level of revenue and operations?
Yeah, we just made a decision to, we were lucky because we've worked with a person in the past, but we had like a really big hire that we just made this week. And so, you know, Jan 2 of 2020, but because he's a contractor, we prepaid for him out of profit from the previous year. We just cut him a huge check. He was willing to do that. That's a very rare circumstance. And obviously it's something that I've worked with for a long time. So I have a tremendous amount of trust and faith in him. And we had the right paperwork drawn up and everything, but that was something that we ended up doing because we were going to spend so I came from a past agency that would want to clear the accounts to reduce taxable income for whatever purpose, but that would set up some issues in Q1 with cash flow. In the agency world, it's really hard to forecast when a client's going to pay. You know, like I tell people all the time with agencies, it's not when they give you a verbal yes. It's not when they sign a contract. It's not when you send the invoice. It's when that money hits your account and stays in your account. That's when you can rely on the cash being there. Mm-hmm. And the bigger the client that you work with, they want to go, you know, maybe 90 days, sometimes even 180 days, depending on, you know, the size of the contract in terms of invoice turnaround. And like that can really mess with your cash flow. And one of the hardest things to do is chasing down open invoices. And if you have, you know, we were running sometimes at upwards of 500,000 in open invoices at times with the business, which is crazy, you know? But that's just kind of the nature of the business. You know, that's just that. And the invoices were too large to do automatic recurring payments. So the point is that we ran into some trouble at the beginning of the year, a couple of years ago, because we decided to clear out the accounts. We decided to give bonuses. We decided to take distributions, all that stuff. And our taxable income was like nothing. But to your point, it's like, then, you know, we operationally kind of screwed ourselves, because this is my new business partner's point of view on clearing the counties is like, for what? We still have to do business on the next day. business. So, and either way too, he's like, you know, the way that I'm set up with taxes is that if I take a distro, I'm still going to get taxed on it, you know? Yeah. So either way, we're going to hit taxes on that capital. So we were able to clear some out to pay for him. We also just invest a ton of money in software. We have two pieces of software that we spun up. That's 100% self-funded, because we've got this training platform that's ridiculously high margin. And, you know, we're able to take a salary from that. We're able to take distros from it, but we're also able to invest pretty much what we need to build this expensive software, which is a really good tax deduction, because that's 100% tax deductible.
Every time.
So just another question too, that I've heard like grumblings about from people in terms of reducing taxable income, is that some people have said that they've set up a separate company, transferred money to that company as kind of like a contractor payment to reduce taxable income, and then still use that capital in the other company, which would technically be tax-free back for the other company, right? For whatever services they needed. Hmm. It sounds a little bit shady to me. I don't know.
It sounds circular to me. In that if you transfer money from one company to another, let's say it's for services that another company is rendering for your company, wouldn't that other company be paying taxes on that? And if you own that company, does it mean you're paying taxes on that?
Well, yes.
I don't know the basis, but my initial outlook is that if money goes from, if money exchanges hands, right? The general philosophy is that someone gets a deduction for it, yes, but someone also gets taxed on it, right? And especially in closely held companies where, you know, you're an owner in one and an owner in another, the rules are even more heavily scrutinized for timing, for everything. So I would have to, you know, hear the specifics of this argument, but generally speaking, if it goes from one bucket to another, it is now taxable in the hands of another. But, you know, to that point, you know, one interesting strategy that we came up with for a client of ours was, you know, they wanted to set up an S corporation for 2019, but it was getting close to the end of the year. And the problem is that they actually didn't have that, like a company set up at that point in time. Okay. So one thought was, well, what if we just created another company and then made an S corporation election for that business, even though it was like most of the way through the year, and then cross charged, you know, income from the old company to the new one. And you know, I'm not going to go into the merits of, you know, whether or not that's valid, because it's really based on the facts and circumstances, but it worked in their particular instance because they were able to prepay for expenses that they were going to get before the end of the year. So, you know, that's a possibility. And the difference there isn't that like you're severely reducing your taxable income, because taxable income is the same, but you're lowering self-employment taxes if you can get an S election in by the end of the year.
Got it. I have another personal question for you actually, because an agency in a previous life, we always run on cash accounting. It's something that I prefer to do because, like I said, because of the open invoices and, you know, then also for taxes too, right? I mean, can you talk to the difference between cash for people who don't know the difference between cash versus accrual and then kind of the implications of using cash versus accrual and what you would recommend for an agency?
Yeah. So really simply, cash basis accounting is you recognize income and expenses when cash actually comes in your bank account or leaves your bank account. So quite simply, you won't recognize revenue until you're actually paid by a client. And on the flip side of things, you won't recognize expenses until you've actually paid your vendors. Okay, so that's cash basis accounting. Accrual basis accounting is different. It provides for matching when it's earned, not necessarily when it's paid. So for example, in the case of an agency, you might have a contract that maybe starts in September and you've done like 3 months of work for, but you haven't actually gotten paid yet. But technically you've done work for it and you've met the terms of a part of your contract. So in theory, you should record some kind of revenue on that. And there's two different ways to do it. You can do it based on invoices. You can do it based on time incurred. Time incurred is really complicated and probably not for anyone who's smaller than at least eight figures. But at least from an invoice perspective, you might have invoiced the client for the amount that you're due, but they might not have paid you yet. And if you get to the end of the year and they haven't paid you yet, well, you haven't recognized that under the cash basis, but you would have recognized that under accrual. So,
which then has a different tax implication, right? Because then your recorded revenue is higher, even though that money never hit your account, right? So are you on the hook? Are you liable for that extra additional revenue in taxes?
Yeah, if you're on the accrual basis, yes. So generally speaking, with like, if to the extent possible with every company, don't do the accrual basis unless it makes sense for your business. Okay. And for very few businesses, like for anyone smaller than 5-10 million, I'd say it's not even worth exploring yet unless you have like some glaring need for like specific financial reporting that's driven based on hours and billable hours, which can happen at that level, but to the extent possible, hold off on doing anything. Keep it simple, keep it cash, because if you get paid after, right, you don't have to pay a tax bill for the year before, right? And you want to defer to the extent possible. Like, you don't want to pay taxes on cash you don't have yet.
Yeah, and that's taxes too, but it's also forecasting and like an understanding of what's happening in your business, right? So that was an issue that we had, was that we were advised to go accrual for valuation purposes, for potential loan purposes, right? It just basically inflates. It's not a lie, because you do have those contracts signed. You should collect that revenue, but like, you just don't know when in the agency world. And like, that's why I said we had a big issue with open invoices. So moving to accrual just really fucked with the weekly management reporting, because we're looking at accrual basis. It's reporting numbers that are way higher than actually cash in the bank. So we're making decisions based on inflated numbers when that's why I believe in cash accounting, because it's the actual picture. And like I said, I mean, I've been through this so many times now to know that it doesn't matter if you're doing work for a client, like they don't have to pay you. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're not going to, like, any contract that's under a certain amount, which 99% of the agencies watching this would fall into that category. Like, you're not going to sue someone over $5,000. You know, you're just not.
You're not going to take them to small claims because it's going to cost you more to go to court.
That's what I'm saying. So like, if the client decides, like, if shit happens in an agency world, maybe you do a bad job, maybe the ball drops. Like, if they feel that way and you have, they owe you 15 grand, and when you have 100 clients, like, that can replicate itself pretty quickly, you know? So like, you might have these cash voids where you think you're going to get paid, and in your mind, in your CFO's mind, you're like, no, we're good because we have all these open invoices, but you can't bank on that, right? You're only going to collect a certain amount of that. You send it to collections, you're going to collect even less of that amount. Then it just burns relations. It's a whole thing, right? I mean, so that's why, like, I strongly suggest cash accounting.
I think cash is king, in my personal opinion, especially for most people at this level. When you become a more sophisticated agency, like at the 5 million, 10 million level, and you need access to capital, or maybe you want to bring outside investors where they require accrual basis or gap basis financial statements, which most people don't matter. Okay, then you can consider doing it, or at least maintaining two separate sets of books. Like, QuickBooks will give you the cash option, so you at least know when you've received cash. But otherwise, it becomes a completely separate management process just to see cash collected. There's this concept in professional service firms with revenue recognition and cash received. It's called days sales outstanding, or DSO. You might have heard of it, maybe in the agency space. But the idea is that, if you're on the accrual basis, just, thinking that you've recognized revenue in your income statement, but haven't actually recognized cash collected yet, the longer it takes for you to get paid for that work, the larger your quote unquote DSO number is. DSO is something that you have to manage entirely, because you want to make sure that you're getting cash as much as possible before you run out of cash to actually pay your operating expenses. I think what sucks the most is that you have to pay your employees every 2 weeks for the work that they do, right? Or every month, or whatever your payroll cycle is. But you might go 3-4 months before you get paid from a client. There is a cost to waiting 3-4 months to get paid. And that cost is cost of capital. Like, what would it cost for you to borrow that money in order to actually pay your employees? Or what would it cost? What's the opportunity cost of not investing that money that you do have that you're paying your employees with in the stock market, where you might be able to get like a 5 or 6% return? So a well-managed agency at that level, you know, should have some process where they're either creating stricter terms with their clients, and maybe you have that flexibility, maybe you don't. But you know, managing that process is critical, because otherwise you're just spending more money for capital. And that's not something you want to do when you're running a professional service firm or an agency.
Takes me back to my MBA days. I flashbacks of like present value of cash.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, time value of money, right? I mean, I spent 8 years in public accounting. So all we did at the manager level was making sure, like, our clients paying us, cool, that means we can pay our employees, right? Like, you got to think as a business owner, like, make sure we have money coming in so we can pay our people.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're not in business.
Yeah, these concepts are so important, man. Like I said, I'm fortunate that I came from corporate consulting world. I hated that world. That's why I ended up leaving and doing my own thing. But like, the experience that I got there, and I was telling myself at the time, I was like, this is a waste. I'm never going to use this. But now that I'm at like the management level and I'm managing teams, and I realize my role is not to understand the latest SEO tactic anymore, because it doesn't matter, right? I hire people to do that. My job is to make sure that we have cash in the bank at all times and we can pay our bills, right? And I can forecast and understand when we're going to get paid, how we're going to grow, like all that stuff. And these concepts that are just core business that have been around for a very long time, they just don't get talked about enough in this like agency space. You know, we tend to focus too much on the latest tactic, the latest hack, you know, the easiest way to get clients. But so many people struggle with just cash management. They just don't, especially, dude, I'm here in Miami, and like, people get paid their first check and they go and buy a freaking Lamborghini. You know what I mean? It's a write-off. It's all good. You know, like, I know people that have agencies down here that do really well, but they like go ahead and decide to rent a penthouse and like the nice thing here, pay 10 grand. They're like, oh, well, this is my office space too, so it's a write-off. I'm like, that's not the way it works. That does that. Like, you can't just write off a $10,000 condo as an office, you know?
Yeah.
I just see it so much down here when I talk to people that like, on the appearance, they're making money, but like, they just don't get it. They're just, there's the core concept of business. They don't grasp it, you know?
Yeah. I think there is a big emphasis on, you know, what you show to the world, especially in the sales and marketing space. We're, you know, digital marketing agencies. The goal is to help clients acquire clients, but you're also in the process of trying to acquire clients. And so your focus is usually on trying to bring in top line revenue for your business. But what we see most business owners lacking in is the discipline in order to actually run a profitable business. And that's the key differentiator between someone who runs a great agency that can grow and scale to the 8-figure, 9-figure mark versus someone who's going to run effectively a self-employed practice, you know, indefinitely, or they just can never grow out of it because they don't have the concepts ingrained in them. And I think, you know, to your credit, you know, a finance background and just business background in general, you know, pays dividends in this space and just running a business in general, because you can at least understand what needs to be done in order to get to that next step. Whereas a lot of people who are starting out, they don't have that framework, and that's okay. You just need to learn it. You know, you need to be disciplined, take time to learn it, learn from the best that we have here, and find great advisors who can point you in the right direction if that's what your goal is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to your point, when you're talking about people doing their own finances, I agree 100%. Like, the easiest way to learn it is just to download all your bank statements, like put them into QuickBooks, put them into something. There's a bunch of free tools out there you can learn too that just kind of like will help you build these P&L statements, balance sheets, just like understanding how cash works. And then it's just, they're really important concepts. And then you can start to move on to like, you know, financial analysis tools, like what type of ratios should be. Actually, I want to ask you that. Like, what type of ratios should an agency be looking at in terms of their cash?
Yeah, there's in terms of like profitability and KPIs, or what we call key performance indices for a service-based model, there's really one that stands out to me. The biggest one is something called the labor efficiency ratio. Okay? And that ratio is revenue to labor cost. That's it. It's really simple. Top line revenue to labor cost. And if you have a good labor efficiency ratio at for an agency. It could be anywhere between 1.8 to 2.5. That's just spitting out random numbers. You really have to look at your agency. Mm-hmm. The reason why it's so important is because your agency is mostly driven by labor and the team that you have that you're employing, right? So a higher labor efficiency ratio means that you're getting a better return for your dollar for your team members that you've hired, right? Imagine like you have a 3-to-1 labor efficiency ratio. That means for every $300 that's coming in, you only have to spend $100 on people and you get $200 in profit. That's a really good margin. That's like a 66% margin. That's huge in a professional service firm. So that's the one that stands out to me. Like, hey, like if you have to look at something, what's your labor cost? The problem with calculating that number when you're a relatively new business owner is that most people don't take their own value into account. In that. Like they might be paying their contractors, they might have like an employee on staff or something, but they haven't factored in what they're paying themselves. Maybe because they're not actually paying themselves a true salary, right? But if you want to measure how efficient your agency is, if you want to measure the efficiency of your business, you need to factor in the true cost of what it would cost to replace yourself, right? So let's say I'm like a business owner and I'm doing like CEO level work, principal type stuff, and you know I value my salary at $150,000, but I'm only paying myself $100 because I want to grow the business. Well, you haven't captured the true cost of your labor and time, the cost it would take to replace you as a business owner. And that has to be factored in. So like mentally, you need to make some adjustments as a business owner that you are an employee of your own business. You should be paid a certain salary. And if you're not paying yourself a certain salary, you need to fix something in order to make sure that you are.
So in order to maintain, that's a really good ratio. We actually look at it more at the granular. We look at a utilization rate in terms of, which is a lot more tricky to calculate. We actually built my partner built some really cool spreadsheet tools that allow us to plug into our project plan, export hours, crosswalk it with all the stuff, which is cool. It gives us utilization rates. But that's at the grassroots level. It's more for like staffing and resourcing. Yeah. But in terms of factoring yourself into that equation, like how much do you recommend, like what do you usually see, I guess, in terms of like maybe percentage of revenue that the owner should take as a salary from the company? I mean, I know it's a really hard question to answer because it varies. It depends on the owner. It depends on a lot of factors, but I guess like for people who are not taking a salary, because this is something I tell people a lot too, is that you can't live off the top line of your business. You just can't. Like it's not smart for you to just be like, oh, I can take 5 this month. I can take 10. It's not smart. So you have to put yourself on a salary. You know, maybe I say year 2 is when you should definitely be on a salary. Like how can they determine how much of a salary they should take? Is it based on revenue? Is it based on profit? Is it based on like what would you recommend to them?
That's a really good question. It depends on the agency and what level of revenue you're doing. I hesitate to peg it to a percentage of revenue only because I think that could be very dangerous, especially if you're at the lower levels or higher levels. Like let's say you had $1 million agency, pay yourself a percentage of revenue, that's going to be a little distorted, and vice versa. Let's say you had like $100,000 agency, might be unusual, but I'd say a range is probably based off of what's livable. Like what can you live off of at your lifestyle up to what the market rate is. And market rate, you can look up on like pretty much any recruiting website. Like, you know, what does it cost to employ you as a person? But, you know, if you had to give a percentage to it, you typically want your labor costs to stay within 50% of revenue, right? So let's say you have contractors on staff. Well, that's a percentage of your revenue. Whatever that delta is to make up 50%, that's a good like rule of thumb. But again, don't hold me to that because it's really going to depend on like
That's good number. 50% is good. Actually, I remember when I used to work at Sapient Nitro years ago as a contractor, exposed to some of the higher ups, and they said that their ratios are, they try to keep a third of their revenue to labor, a third of their revenue to overhead offices because they have massive offices, travel, all that stuff. And then a third they try and keep as profit, but it does depend. Actually, what we're doing now is I'm super fortunate because I have multiple income streams, but the way that I was able to pull myself I don't do agency work anymore. I hired someone to be the manager, but I basically replaced myself with them. And now I don't take a salary. I just take distros quarterly.
And that makes perfect sense because you basically hired someone to replace yourself. So you're just the owner of the business, the capital owner.
And now it becomes a true investment cash flow company for me because that's the beauty. That's where I try to encourage everyone to get with their agencies is number one is understand what you want to do with your agency. Do you want to build 100-person company with, you know, $50 million in revenue, which is awesome if you do. But that's like, that's an HR game. Kind of like what you said too, is like, once you get to a certain point, it's about people. We're literally selling people. We don't have our industry isn't at the point yet where software is taking over for what we're doing, right? There's still a huge human element to what we're doing. So you get to the point where you're selling yourself, then you build a team and you're selling them, and you have to evacuate yourself from that, right? You have to step back and be sales, operations, whatever it is that you do the best, and then get to the point where you pull yourself out completely and that agency runs the cash flow, you know, business. That's how it runs for me. I look at it like a cash flow business. We get paid up front every month. We're making sure that they're getting paid on time. And then, you know, we're maintaining about 50% net at the bottom line, which is awesome because then, you know, we have a ton of profit left over that basically becomes my salary for that company, which is good.
Yeah. So you're like the true shareholder. That's my Siri going off. Sorry. You're like true shareholder of the business, right? Where you're like getting dividends from the business rather than an actual salary, right? And your only responsibility is as the capital owner, you are responsible for managing the general manager of your business, right? Because he's running the show, he's running the operations, he's running the people, all aspects of your company, and your responsibility is to make sure that he's hitting his mark, right? Exactly. You get compensated for that because you have the capital in the business, you own the business, and you take draws from it. That's the ideal level, like, by the way. So you've made it, right? You've made it, because I think that's where most people, like, in my mind, I don't think you ever want to be stuck as the operator of your business indefinitely.
I agree.
Like, if you want a reasonable growth over time, eventually you're going to get to the point where you need to hire a general manager in order to do your business, because you're going to have other things that you're interested in doing, like other pursuits and whatnot, and it's just not going to be the most efficient use of your time. To your credit, it takes a lot of time to get there, to build up an agency and a business to get to that level where you can hire someone else to replace you and do all the things that you used to do. And so when I talk to business owners about the efficiency of their business, I tell them they have to wear two hats, really. Right? You have to first think of yourself not just as the owner of your business, but also as an employee in your business. Like, you have two different functions, right? As the capital owner, like the owner of the business, right? You need to think of your role as making sure that the business itself is pointed in the right direction and growing the way that you want it to, and hold the CEO or for the business, in case yourself, accountable to that growth, right? And that plan to make it a bigger and better thing. And then as the CEO, responsible for the vision, executing that vision, and then the operations, and then the finance, and then eventually you hire people out to do these different functions, and that's how you should be compensated too. Like, part as a CEO, part as owner, in theory at least. Not everyone gets there to that level, and that's fine. Not everyone wants to be there, but, you know, I think it's a very worthwhile aspirational goal to try.
No, for sure. I mean, the biggest thing for me was just understanding that I was going to take, like, you just have to take less money. You know, you take less money to do less work, but it frees up so much. Again, like, just like you go through stages of growth as an agency in terms of like being a consultant, then you hire a few people, contractors, W-2s, there's progressions to everything, but it's also really important to understand that for yourself, right? Like, what is it that you want to do? Where do you want to be? And what is it that you need to take mentally to get there? And one of those things was like, I'm going to have to make less money this year, you know, like, but that means I'm going to do less work, which means that my time is free. Like, you truly have to understand the value of your time and like what you apply your time to and how much you can get from that, right? Before, I was thinking, man, if I apply all my time to this agency, I can make X amount. But now it's like, if I step back, I take X divided by 3, but I'm then able to take that same and build something else and then do the same thing, X divided. So that's kind of like was my realization in 2019 that I'm going to make the least money I've made in years, but I'm okay with that because now my plate is free to go out and pursue that thing with something with a higher cap. So yeah. So anyways, that's all the time that we got for today. If you guys need any tax help, any accountant help, Brian, tell them how they can get in touch with you.
You guys can get in touch with me. You can send me an email at Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, at clevertaxes.com. Alternatively, you can check out our website, clevertaxes.com. If you want to book an appointment just to talk about taxes, accounting, finance, whatever problem you have in your agency that you need help with, let us know. You can do it through the website or shoot me an email and I'll be happy to get in touch.
We got a few people in there that says, okay, we're just going to hire you, Brian. So
sounds good to me. Shoot me an email. We'll get in touch.
All right, man. I appreciate your time.
Brian, it was a pleasure. Always.
Have a great week.
You too. Have a good one. Bye-bye.